Yes, you've tuned into another episode of Comedy History 101. Yes, this is part two of a two-part episode on the history of Mad Magazine. Oh, by the way, we've been discussing what we should call our loyal fans here at Comedy History 101. You know, our loyal listeners. We've come up with possibly the name Comhissers. If you like that, be sure to comment on iTunes or our website, Comedy History 101. And just a quick plug before we jump into part two of our history of Mad Magazine. I have a new book coming out July 30th called Tribe Spotting Undercover Culture Stories. It's all about my true life undercover exploits infiltrating cultural tribalism in America. Ooh. You can check out the book on Amazon.com. And without further ado,
you're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Juvenile delinquency, the 50s term for bad kids. It scared parents and preachers, psychologists and politicians. Now, it may be hard to believe, but many loudly condemned the influence of comic books. One writer called comics the marijuana of the nursery, the curse of kids. But through crafty maneuvering, one comic book, Mad, avoided this version of censorship and even thrived because of it.
What you heard there was a clip from a History Channel special on Mad Magazine. And why we are laminating on Mad Magazine is, after 67 years, Mad Magazine is going to cease publication. And yes, you've tuned into part two of our history of Mad Magazine here on
Comedy History 101.
Where we school you in comedy. I, of course, am Harmon Leon, and with me, as always, Scott Colonico. Scott, how have you been since part one of our History of Mad Magazine?
Well, let's see, Harmon. I've been a little hot. It is a little hot over on this side of the pond, as we say. But other than that, I've been looking forward to part two.
Yeah. So, want to do a little recap with me? Part one, we talked about, first, the origins of Mad Magazine. And again, we're going to continue our conversation with Joe Raiola. Yeah, he was the editor and writer for Mad Magazine for 33 years. This all focuses on a story I have in TheObserver.com where I interviewed Joe. That was sort of the catalyst for this podcast. So as we heard up front, Mad Magazine was kind of a contributor to juvenile delinquency.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So there's this iconic photo of Jimi Hendrix reading Mad Magazine while a hairstylist is working on his hair. Have you ever seen that?
I think I have, now that you mention it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to drop it in on our site, Comedy History 101. But what I love about that is, like, Jimmy has just a huge smile on his face, and he's reading an issue of Mad Magazine. And what I like to think is when Jimi Hendrix played, you know, that iconic version of the Star Spangled Banner at Woodstock, I like to think that Jimmy was kind of doing his Mad Magazine take on the national anthem. Don't you agree or disagree?
Kind of, I like that. No, I mean, now that I've kind of recalled that photo, it's just talk about the photo for our readers or listeners if they haven't seen it. It's Jimi Hendrix and they wearing a purple top and looks like maroon red pants, reading a Mad Magazine, getting his hair worked over by a young lady. Making him look his best for a show, I guess, probably that evening.
So, like we mentioned in last week's episode, is Mad Magazine not only influenced Jimi Hendrix, but it also influenced someone that was probably a favorite of yours, Roger Ebert, who actually got into critiquing.
Why is he a favorite of mine? Why is he a favorite of mine?
Because, first, didn't he write Beneath the Valley of the Dolls.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, sure. I'll give it.
But second, you are a filmmaker, and he is kind of the most iconic filmmaker in history, iconic film critic in history.
And he did write the classic line, "This is my happening, and it really freaks me out." So, yeah.
Yeah, we've used that in a video or two. Yeah. So he got into film reviewing and film critiquing because of MAD, because of their spoofs on movies, which kind of just, you know, highlighted the cliches that are seen and heard in films. Terry Gilliam, you know, his amazing animation he did for Monty Python. He said, you know, he was heavily influenced by MAD magazine. Patti Smith, the punk poetess, loved MAD magazine. She said, you know, something after MAD, drugs were nothing. So the list goes on and on. But one person who really was influenced by MAD magazine was the man who we interviewed, Joe Raiola, who worked for MAD magazine. Here is Joe's thoughts on the first time he came across MAD magazine.
The first stuff I remember were the song parodies. I used to love Frank Jacobs stuff. And I don't remember what issue it was, but I remember the songs. Off we go into the lunchroom yonder, shoving girls out of the way. Hurry, boys, move on down that counter. Hurry up, fill the tray. Try the beans they prepared last Friday, and the meat is tough as a mule. The bread's got mold, the soup is cold. Yuck, anything beats the lunchroom at our school.
Now, so that's – there's two interesting things about song parodies in MAD. First, who do you think was really, really – we're talking about influences that MAD has had on, you know, kind of our comedic and cultural heroes. Who do you think was really kind of influenced to take off on a career in song parodies because of reading MAD magazine?
Oh, I would guess probably the only song parodist I could think of. Yeah, which would be Mad, not Mad, Weird Al. He's Mad Al.
I think in the more recent years, he was like a guest editor on Mad, Weird Al. And
really?
There's a photo of him on the cover of Mad magazine.
Harmon, I've got an update for those of our you know, our close followers. I don't want to say Comedy History 101 nerds, but just people who are sticklers.
Shouldn't we have a term for them?
We have
99 PI calls their fans like beautiful nerds.
Oh, that's right.
If you are a listener and want to be termed as something, be sure to send us an email via our website, comedyhistory101, or you can Instagram.
Yeah.
Or Twitter.
Yeah, send us a tweet, you know. So for all the to-be-named Comedy 101 nerds out there, for the record, Harmon, that I just did a little research, and the magazine, MAD magazine, that Jimi Hendrix is holding is MAD magazine number 113 from September of 1967 in that photo.
And what year was Woodstock? Woodstock was 69, of course. Yeah. It's the 50th anniversary in August, so... Yeah, there you go. Jimi Hendrix, who blew people's minds, is probably having his mind blown away by MAD magazine. And as we stated in the last episode that, you know, MAD appealed to the counterculture, but yet via the editorial staff was kind of square. Kind of a bunch of squares doing this great satirical, comedic magazine that took on the establishment, but that's what sort of made it kind of cool.
Interesting.
They would make fun of the establishment, but they'd also poke fun at hippies.
Yeah, you can make fun of hippies. The lighter side of hippies. You know?
Yeah. And what would they have in that?
That would be like a hippie who was like taking money from his parents to buy his drugs or whatever.
Oh, right, okay.
And the dad would always be wearing socks, and he'd have a pipe.
I think that was like what Dave Berg looked
Dave
like.
Dave Berg, yeah, now some people were saying that's what he looked like.
Yeah. So here's I teased out that there was two things interesting about what that song parody that Joe was influenced by. The second was not only did it influence Weird Al Yankovic, but it actually legally paved the way for Weird Al Yankovic to have a career, because Mad actually got sued by Irving Berlin, songster Irving Berlin.
The copyright case involved a Frank Jacobs book that was called Sing Along with Mad, which came out late, which came out, I don't know the exact years of that. You'd have to check out the exact years. Sing Along with Mad, yeah, that was Irving Berlin and a bunch of people sued Mad over that because they didn't like their songs being made fun of, essentially. A court ruled that like 23 of the 25 songs were satires by the judge's view, but two of the songs, both written by Irving Berlin, the judge ruled against Mad. He said that the titles and the lyrics of the song were too similar to the real song. So Gaines actually accepted that. Gaines, hard to believe, because this was not in Bill's character. Bill was happy with the decision, but Irving Berlin appealed it. The fact that only two of those songs were considered not satire didn't please him, so he appealed the whole thing. And the case was heard by this judge who had put the Rosenbergs to death. Irving, this is true. Irving R. Kaufman was the judge who heard Irving Berlin's appeal, and that's what he was most famous for, electrocuting the Rosenbergs.
Oh my God.
And he made the famous ruling in Mad's favor across the board, and his famous line was that Irving Berlin does not own iambic pentameter. And Berlin appealed the case again. and the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, refused to hear the appeal, and that is why Weird Al Yankovic has a career.
Well, Harmon, again, just to appeal to our yet-to-be-named comedy nerds out there in the audience, the actual court case is called Berlin versus EC Publications, Inc., and the appeal was in 1964. The main thing is that interesting that Berlin didn't like the judgment he got, went back to try to get a better one, and in the end kind of lost it all and opened the way for Weird Al.
Yeah, exactly. And that the judge who presided over the case was responsible for electrocuting the Rosenbergs.
Yeah, that's okay. That's something else.
Was it 1950s or World War II era potential spies?
It was like 1950s. Yeah, it was after the war. Yeah, so it was this, they gave the secrets to the atomic bomb, was their claim to infamy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
But also, while we're on this, just to appeal to the nerds, Harm, I just found another little bit of trivia. Also, who was on the court during the appeal, it was the appeal in the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, Judge Thurgood Marshall. was on that. Future Supreme Court Justice was on that. So he was a fan of Mad, maybe even back then.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And again, that also led to, say, Hustler magazine being able to parody Jerry Falwell.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, boy. Yeah, we'll have to get into that one.
But yeah, so interesting. So basically, Mad came back, and then in their editorial, they would in their copy, they would say, "It you could sing it to this tune. You might choose to sing it in the style of Irving Berlin. It's only a suggestion." But you would think, you know, so Mad, you know, known for this satirical, you know, nothing's off limits for Mad. But there was a few things, editorial guidelines for Mad magazine, like there was no nudity. Maybe occasionally, you know, in a movie satire, there'd be like a brief glimpse of nudity. There was no swearing. Do you remember any swearing other than blech?
No, blech, blech.
Yeah. Just a side note before I go down this avenue is, so Irving Berlin, sued to get his stuff, you know, not to be made fun of. But actually, this does tie in. So with the movie things, they became so popular, the movie satires and Mad. At first, movie studios hated it, but then they started pitching Mad that, you know, to say, will you please make fun of us? Will you please satirize our movie? Because then it became like cool to be satirized in Mad.
Yeah, I remember. So the thing with for me was like, that's what you would go if it was like an R-rated movie or something you couldn't see as a kid. You'd go read the Mad satire, so you kind of knew. You kind of knew what happened in the movie,
right? Yeah, exactly.
Like with Alien, you know, you couldn't see Alien, but I'd go read the Mad magazine, and I kind of knew there was like a face hugger and things coming out of people's stomachs and stuff like that.
Would the Mad parody be called Alien Blah?
It'd be Blalien.
But there was a few, like we said, there was no nudity, there was no swearing, and here's a few other things that were off limits at Mad Magazine.
We never liked victim humor. We really tried to stay away from what we called victim humor. I mean, what fun is it making fun of people who have cancer or are sick or who've died in a natural disaster of some sort? We really did our best to not do that.
Right.
And I remember once that we did a, maybe in a Don Martin cartoon, I remember once we did a one-pager and the joke was at the expense of a bulimic. And a bunch of people wrote to us, and, you know, we felt pretty shitty about it afterwards. But, you know, why make fun of a bulimic? There's no reason. We'd rather not do it. So, we really – that was kind of like our one in-house rule. I mean, in terms of language, I mean, I suppose we could have used fucking shit in Mad if we really wanted to. But, you know, that was an editorial choice that we made. We didn't – We chose not to go there. I mean, there was nudity in Mad at times, but it was always in context. For example, if we were if Mort Drucker or Jack Davis were illustrating an R-rated film that had kind of sexy content, we might have a little bit of sexy, you know, art in Mad, but we tried never to be gratuitous.
So two things here, Scott, and this is the episode where there's a lot of two things about things. So I think this goes back to another episode we did here on Comedy History 101. Again, you know, Mad took on the voice of, you know, kind of the underdog, which is, of course, punching up. And on a previous episode, which we did on our friend, and I put that in air quotes, Nick DiPaolo in right-wing conservative comedy, the reason we concluded, you know, that it fails is it's just a lot of, you know, punching down at the target. So, you know, Mad was always about, you know, it was always about punching up, and they even felt bad at to be called out at something that might be considered punching down.
Right. So you wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, they did have their share of controversy over the years. I think it was like pre-Charlie Hebdo. Remember the controversy with the Danish comedian or the Danish cartoonist?
That was the Adran Muhammad.
Yeah. So what takeaway would you have from the Danish cartoon controversy if you were a cartoonist?
Don't draw Muhammad.
It could cut it, because why?
People get mad.
And they do what?
Blow you up and do not nice things.
Yeah, so that actually led to, you know, one of the, you know, controversies that happened at MAD. Why don't we just have Joe explain it in his own words?
Hey, Jimmy, the one and only time that Muhammad appeared in MAD was in a piece that I wrote called Other Religious Images and Food, currently available on eBay. And that had – we had stuff in that like the 12 apostles and a bucket of chicken McNuggets and Ganesh and Baba Ganoush, and we had Muhammad in a pancake, and it was based on the Virgin Mary and the grilled cheese sandwich. And that was published right around the time of the Danish cartoon controversy. And, there are articles written about that. MAD was published in a Middle Eastern edition then. And right. we got a call, that was no fun. We laughed, but it was, we probably shouldn't have been laughing. It's fucked up. You know, you never thought going into the business of making MAD that you'd be taking your life in your hands. But I remember also we were there during the whole Charlie Hebdo thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, holy shit. You know, there was extra security that Warner Brothers brought in for us. And I remember John, our executive editor for all the years I was there, appeared on, I think it was CBS Morning News, but you could research that, and he wrote basically a comment. And I remember walking into John's office that day and helping him craft that. I mean, you never expect that shit to go down. And you know, we actually did a pretty famous piece. I believe it was the late 90s, but you'd have to check the date. We did a one pager on pedophile priests, that and the joke was that the priest was in the pulpit saying, we're going to have a second collection today because we have to basically cover our legal expenses for all the lawsuits about pedophile priests. Well, the Catholic League, you know, went berserk on us. They wrote to us. They wrote to our publisher. Bill was gone by then. Jeanette Kahn was the publisher. They wrote to Jeanette. And the letter they wrote, holy shit, they accused MAD of a pattern of abuse. That's the actual phrase they use. Can you imagine that? The Catholic Church, the Catholic League accusing MAD of a pattern of abuse. I mean, we love when stuff like that happened. Because it meant that we were on the right track.
Well, I mean, like it's like you were saying, they were, you know, when you're getting the religious people angry, then you know you're doing something right. So I'm behind Mad Magazine on that. Yeah, and it's kind of ironic that the Catholic Church would come out and accuse somebody else of a pattern of abuse. I mean, it just kind of says it all right there. So I mean, I think that's always good when you're thumbing your noses at the authorities, you know, which is the job of Mad Magazine.
Yeah, but I think that sort of take is very Trumpian, you know. The guy, you know, you're the bully on the Twitter, and then you get bullied, and then you just
contradict yourself.
Right, yeah, totally. Well, that's what you do when you talk to bullies. It's you stand up to them and they go away, or they learn their lesson.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I asked Joe if, like, you know, was it because this era of Trump, do you think that was part of the not, you know, mad sort of, not downfall, but, you know, part of the reason that this is an era where our political leaders kind of self-satirize themselves. They're like, how do you satirize something that's already so satirical in itself? Like, it's just, you know, but he actually, you know, Joe said that, you know, this was actually an era where, you know, I mean, if you look around, it festers, you know, a lot of great comedy, you know, from like Colbert and John Oliver, you know, Bill Maher, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it was more about not a reflection on the Trump era, but kind of a reflection on just magazine print era in general. Like, not, you know, not only is Mad going away, but, you know, print magazines and newsstands are going away.
Yeah, just in general. I mean, he brought up a good point. I don't know if you're going to play this part or we're going to use it as a quote, but the thing that Joe was talking about, how, because this is something that's always kind of started to rankle me, is like, he was like, yeah, Saturday Night Live helped create Trump. And you're like, yeah, don't start putting the people that you're making fun of on your show. Then you're like, because that just kind of deflates the whole thing, you know, like the way they would have Trump on Saturday Night Live, and they started inviting Palin after a while, and it was just like, God. You know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't believe, like, there's two things about Trump. It was first when Saturday Night Live, I mean, these are the targets. Why do you want them whipping quips and doing monologues and, you know, Sarah Palin involved in a rap video on Saturday Night Live? And again, that's just a reflection on, I mean, right now we have some of the best, you know, topical comedians, you know, John Oliver, you know, Stephen Colbert. I love his monologues, and, you know, I love the Bill Maher show. But yeah, like, Saturday Night Live is just like unexcusable. And same with like just Jimmy Fallon messing up Trump's hair on his show.
Yeah.
I mean, he's right there, and that's all you can come up with. And, I mean, that's why that show just has no relevance whatsoever. And I can't even believe, you know, it's on TV as we speak.
I mean, that's what's interesting now. I was losing my train of thought there, but you were talking about, basically how the fact that Trump has just outlasted Alec Baldwin, you know? It's just like Alan Baldwin is retiring from doing his Trump impression, you know? It's just like Trump is kind of won in a way.
Yeah, and again, even that, it's just, oh man, it's just like old Saturday Night Live, it's just like, it was just, I don't know, I guess I just don't watch the current Saturday Night Live enough to come to any judgment, but, you know, it's just pretty unfunny.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's there's some good people on there, but yeah, and then also, I think the other interesting thing, our mini little sidetrack here, is that, like, where once upon a time Saturday Night Live, they would put musical guests, they would, like, put people that they enjoyed to be on there, whereas now it's more of, like, whoever is the number one in the charts, even if people don't like them, they'll be on the show, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the second episode, and again, we'll have to do, like, let's do a episode on the first season of Saturday Night Live. Yeah. The second episode was, I believe, it was, like, Paul Simon hosted, and it was, I think there was, like, one comedy sketch in the whole show.
Yeah.
And I think the only cast member in it was, like, Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
You know, they still didn't, like, have their voice. And it's really interesting to watch that first season and watch it slowly get its voice, because it like the first few episodes are kind of shaky.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, Belushi's just like in one or two sketches until, like, he just breaks it out with his Joe Cocker impersonation, which, as listeners of Comedy History 101 will know, that was something he did in the Lemmings show.
Right.
National Lampoon Lemmings. But, yeah, anyways, interesting. See, we digress. Here's Joe's thoughts on, you know, working for Mad. And again, it's sadly, you know, the last issue is coming out in August. And you know, after 67 years, it's folding. And another good point that Joe brought up is when you think of, like, National Lampoon, one of the great comedy magazines of all time, it probably only had 10 years of less of, you know, being at its peak creativity and comedy prowess. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean,
or disagree.
No,
the takes you could have on it.
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I haven't read Mad Magazine in quite some time, so I mean, for me, it seems like that 70s was kind of the peak of their era, and that actually was there. Wasn't that the circulation peak was like 74, 75?
Yeah, 2.4 million.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that was, you know, their heyday was kind of the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think the 60s probably too. Yeah, that's when, you know, we have Jimi Hendrix, you know, looking at it. But, you know, again, though, you know, 67 years as a magazine, like any magazine, 67 years is pretty impressive.
It's pretty good.
You know, and then the Lampoon is like, you know, another, you know, great comedy publication, but, you know, it probably only had like 10 years of, you know, its top stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, yeah, it's interesting when you see, yeah, there's always that little peak, and then everything else is either coasting or pre-coasting.
Yeah, they just kind of start, like what Saturday Night Live does, it's just... Mm-hmm. Just repeating the same sketches over and over again. But here's Joe's reflection on 33 years at Mad Magazine.
I think Mad is the only place in America where if you work there and you matured, you got fired. I was never fired. In fact, I was promoted. And when you work at a place like Mad for that length of time, and I remain kind of rooted in my adolescence in some ways, I'll never grow out of it. I will forever be. I can't stop thumbing my nose. it's like I wake up in the morning and I put my thumb to my nose and start twiddling my fingers at the ceiling.
yeah.
Because it's reflexive at this point. And you know, I'll also say this, that Mad, essentially at its heart, it's not a brand. I understand that everything's a brand now, and that Mad had to be a brand and so, but it's not a brand. It's a mindset. It's a lens through which one sees the world. And you know, I had the good fortune to inherit the tradition, the voice, and help make it my own. And that's what we all did. That's what everyone on that's what all the Mad editors did. We were fortunate enough to have the opportunity to receive this, call it what it is. It's just this great satiric and uniquely American voice that emerged out of the McCarthy era. It's really, you know, think about how bleak things were in the 50s, and Mad somehow was born then. So it's been a fucking marvelous ride. It really has.
So, Scott, any final takeaways on Mad Magazine or on its 67-year run?
I think they had a good run. Thumbing their nose at the establishment for over 60 years. I think the cool thing that I learned about Mad Magazine, you know, because I remember just... I think a friend had a stack of them. This is probably in the late 70s, had a stack of them, and just kind of, so I got exposed to a bunch of Mad magazines at one time. I think the thing that was surprising to me, which I'd never realized even to this day, was that they didn't accept advertising. I think that's pretty cool.
Yep, they didn't accept advertising. One final trivia, William Gaines, the publisher, did you know he comes from a comic book family?
I read a little spot that his dad owned EC or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think his dad was responsible for publishing, not writing, but publishing, getting Wonder Woman.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Wonder Woman. I heard you guys talking about that, yeah, in the interview.
Yeah, so again, I think that about does it. We've had two parts on the history of Mad Magazine. And with that, I think it's time to plug away. Scott, what do you have to plug?
Hey, Harmon. Well, as our listeners have been hearing, Harmon and I produced a new documentary short called Everything That You Always Wanted to Know About Sudden Birth, But Were Afraid to Ask. And yes, it is funny. That's currently touring around the United States. I can't tell you, there's a couple secret screenings coming up, but you'll be able to find out where we are screening over at my website, scottcolonico.com/suddenbirth. You can find out the latest screening information there. And as listeners of the show will also know, Harmon and I have another podcast called This is the President, where we take found presidential audio and dissect it, make fun of it. Harmon will... fills us in on the latest happenings in the United States, and that's also where you can find iTunes and Google Play, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Also, along with that, we've reignited our YouTube channel. This is the President. Just do a Google search for that, or on YouTube, This is the President, where you can find out all our cool audio clips, like the last episode that we just did, where President Johnson is talking to an aquanaut who has breathed too much helium. Kind of a funny phone call. Harder to describe, but it's funny when you hear it.
Ah, very nice, very nice. And for me, in August, I'll be appearing at the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland from August 17th through, I believe, the 26th. I'll be doing my brand new solo show, Harmon Leon's American Horror Story. Also, I have a new book coming out July 30th called Tribe Spotting, Undercover Culture Stories. You can order it on Amazon. Also, take some time to subscribe, like, and comment on iTunes. Seriously, how long will that take you?
Yeah,
we'll
nothing.
Read your comments on the air.
Read them on
Why
the air.
Why haven't you already done it?
Yeah. I'm angry.
Yeah. So with that, thanks a lot for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on
Comedy History 101.
Where we school you in comedy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Yes, ma'am. I read you loud and clear. Yes, ma'am. This is... Yes, ma'am. This is the President.
Hey everyone, Scott here. You just finished our Comedy History 101 podcast. So you like comedy and history. Then you should try out our other podcast, This is the President. In every episode, I dig up some found audio from one of our presidents and play it for Harmon, who's never heard it before. Then we talk about it. From Truman to Trump, we cover all your favorite presidents. And not so favorite ones. You can also hear Harmon sounding off about current events and the state of America today. And, if you're lucky, you might be able to catch us reading customer reviews of Trump products on Amazon. You can subscribe to This is the President on iTunes, Google Play, Last.fm, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Just search for This is the President, subscribe, and together we'll make America great again.